dated Tuesday, March 28th, Cedar Hills, Utah, located in the Community Recreation Center. I want to recognize the voting commission members tonight, because we will be slightly voting on something tonight. That's Craig Clement, David Driggs, Jeff Dodge, John Dredge, and Steve Thomas will be voting members tonight on Planning Commission. The agenda, back to the agenda at hand here. So I'd like to ask if there's anybody here to make a public comment in the meeting. We will have a public hearing after a public comment as well. But is anybody here to make a public comment of any nature? So I will close the public comment portion of the meeting and now open up the public hearing portion of the meeting. There's a public hearing on the conditional use permit for a bed and breakfast and wedding venue located at 9914 North 4000 West in the RR1 20,000 residential zone. If anybody's here to make comment during the public hearing portion of the meeting?
Is that me?
No.
If you'd like to.
No, let's
like to.
More than welcome to.
When do I make a comment?
Probably during the presentation.
Okay.
Answer questions, probably.
Yeah. Great. So I will now close the public hearing portion of the meeting. The first scheduled item is approval of minutes from the January 24, 2017 Planning Commission meeting. I'll entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
I move that we approve the minutes from the January 24, 2017 Planning Commission meeting.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Will we vote? It's everything found to be correct, I presume. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Moving right along. Item number four, review action item on approving a conditional use permit for a bed and breakfast and wedding venue located at 9914 North, 4000 West in the RR1 20,000 residential zone. And just for the commission to acknowledge, this is not a discussion item. This is something we will, you know, pass a motion on tonight, just so you're aware. So Chandler, what do you have?
Okay. There's two issues here. There's an issue of a bed and breakfast, and there's an issue of the, if you look in the code for conditional use permits, 10.5-37, there's a change in the primary use of a residential dwelling. Both of those, the Planning Commission is the approving body, and it does require a public hearing, which we've successfully had. But before we really get into that, I wanted to go through the conditional use code as it is fairly new to the city and just kind of go over what a conditional use is, what the standards in the city are. So from the code, it says an application for a conditional use permit may be granted by the land use authority, that's the Planning Commission in this case, subject to the provisions of this code. The purpose of a conditional use permit is to allow the proper integration into the city of certain uses which may have a detrimental effect within the city. Certain uses which may be harmonious under special conditions and in specific locations within a zone, but may be improper under general conditions in other locations. So that's why they're conditional, not permitted. It may be okay to have it one place, but not necessarily okay to have it another. It's based on conditions. From B, in that section of code, it says, in both the case of the bed and breakfast and the proposed wedding venue, a CUP is required. A CUP may be revoked upon failure of the applicant, any successor, any further owner of the property, owner or occupant to comply with the conditions approved at the original approval of the permit. Both applications require a public hearing, which we've had, and they have been properly noticed. You've probably seen the signs on the property and throughout the city if you've been looking. And the Planning Commission, as I said, is the land use authority in both instances. So I just want to take a second to talk about the standards for granting CUP, because this is what is basically the bedrock of what all the conditions are founded on. you won't find conditions in the code, but you find the standards upon which the conditions are created, and that's what these are. In order to effectively mitigate, it's not eliminate, but to mitigate the reasonably anticipated detrimental effects that a CUP may have on an area, the City Council has adopted standards that will, when applied correctly, reduce the impact on the surrounding area that the conditional use permit may, that use may have. The effects of the CUP are to be mitigated, if not eliminated. First, the health, safety, and general welfare of persons residing in the general vicinity, so it would be the neighbors adjacent to the properties. Injury, is the use injurious to property or to improvements in the city? Will it stress quality development with an emphasis toward buffering, landscaping, proper parking, and traffic circulation to create privacy? Will it minimize impact on utilities and streets? May it be required to provide such reports related to utilities, traffic impacts? That's not necessarily the case here, but if we were going to do a commercial development down in the SE1 zone, we may require a traffic study. The proposed use will promote health and sanitation by controlling for waste, dust, gases, odors, and other types of pollution. And I'm really paraphrasing the code, so if you want to dive in 10537, go ahead. And it's compatible with the general plan, and it protects the quality of the underlying zone and all lighting, aesthetics, noise, signs, landscaping, general use, and design will comply with the standards of the zone. So a detrimental or injurious conditional use is defined as it causes unreasonable risks to safety or persons or properties because of vehicular traffic, parking, or large gatherings of people. It's also detrimental if it interferes with the lawful use of properties. If it creates an additional need for essential city or public services, which cannot be met without unreasonable efforts and expenditures on the city's part, and it poses an unreasonable detriment or injury to the health or safety or general welfare of persons and properties in the area, and if it's not in harmony with the general plan. So with that being said, are there any questions on the conditions and what is considered to be detrimental or injurious? Be straightforward. Okay. So what I wanted to do tonight was to take these two issues and kind of separate them out, not talk about them all at once, but to tackle one and tackle the other. So if that's okay, I was going to start with the bed and breakfast. Okay. The bed and breakfast, the code is in section 10-5-25. And if you've read through the code, you might see some funny things in there. So I was just going to go through, in section B of that code, I'm just going to go through the requirements that it outlines for a bed and breakfast, and then we can ask some questions. So in B1, is it allowed in the district? It is allowed as a conditional use in the district. B2, the building is not a historical structure, as defined in section B2, as the city does not have any historical structures. If you look at the register, Cedar Hills is void of those. But the code further does clarify that the City Council could designate it as such. That's something we could look at. B3, that it requires 200 feet of frontage. The lot has 206. B4, which was B4? Someone reading that code?
Bedrooms.
Number of bedrooms. How many bedrooms are in there on the main primary dwelling?
Five.
There's four that were designated for this purpose.
There's six. I think it's to the square footage of the lot.
Yeah, it's based on the square footage. There's a minimum of two, and then based on the size of the lot, as the lot expands, there's grants for additional bedrooms, and I think that you're limiting it to four.
To four, but we could have eight, but okay. I don't want eight.
Okay, so there's four, and I think that their square footage and building meets that.
It's an eight-bedroom home, just to clarify. Is that right?
It's a six-bedroom home.
It's a six-bedroom.
And based on, what's this lot?
Maximum of six. Every 5,000 square feet in excess of the 30,000 square feet allows for an additional room.
So with this being a very large lot, it does accommodate for four. All bedrooms are located within the primary dwelling, according to B5, B6, the entrance would be the same as for the primary dwelling. And correct me if I'm wrong on any of these, please jump in. Seven, no food will be prepared in the bedrooms. There will be separate food prep areas.
Correct.
Right. B8, the site plan indicates, that's in your packet, the site plan indicates more than adequate parking for a bed and breakfast. So I don't believe that there's a concern there. That the code does not allow a bed and breakfast to park on the street, so we'll just keep that in mind. B9, as part of the approval process, the owner must comply with the building inspection. I believe in your notes that you submitted to the council or the commission, you did say that you would
absolutely
do that.
We actually had a member come through the house today.
Good. B10, and this is the question I think has
probably open to the most discussion. Does the dwelling retain a residential environment? Does that change if it becomes a bed and breakfast? I think that's up to this commission to decide. I don't know that I necessarily think it does. B11, no sign is requested at this time. And under B12, even with the recent changes in state code regarding business licensing, a business license would be required.
What are you referring to in regards to the recent changes?
The legislature passed Bill SB 81, which eliminates a city's ability to license home-based businesses if they have no material impact greater than a normal residential building. So, for example, if I am an accountant and I get up in the morning and I go downstairs and I turn on my computer and I do work from home and nobody comes into my home and I'm done at 5 o'clock and I go eat dinner with my family, there's no material impact on the city. So they're saying the city can't acquire a business license for that. Now, if I run a daycare in my basement, that's much different because people come, they drive on the streets, they come, they maybe clog the streets at that time, and then when they come pick up their kids, they do it again. So there's a difference there. So they're saying, so where people enter the home, that's kind of where the city's heading in their definition, where there's a material impact. So we feel like there would still be a material impact here.
So is that going to, are we going to address that issue here soon?
This body won't, no.
The council
will.
The city.
As it where it's not a land use issue under Title 10, it just has to go through the planning first to the city council. It's Title 3. So in speaking with our attorney, because I was concerned about the historical building, he recommended that because there's no historical buildings within the city, that the city remove that provision from the code. I think the council can still designate land as such, but the city is such a young city that it seems, maybe a little unnecessary in my mind. But other than that, like, those are the issues with the bed and breakfast. I don't see any major issues with the bed and breakfast. Does the Planning Commission, do you have any questions?
Before we get into questions, I forgot to congratulate you on your promotion, Chandler.
Thank you.
City manager from assistant city manager, right?
Correct, yeah. Thank you.
So since our last meeting, and I wanted to recognize Councilman Rob Crawley, who's here with us tonight as well. And then just a question before we get into discussion. So what is the appeal path for this if, for example, it doesn't pass, just so the body understands?
Yeah, that's a good question. So let's say that you as the land use authority were to deny the application for a CUP. At that point, it would go to, I believe, the Board of Adjustment. Okay. It could also possibly go to the City Council after that. But there is an appeal process that's outlined in the City Code, and we just recently looked at that. I want to say it's the Board of Adjustment. It would be the appeal authority for the Planning Commission.
All right.
So there is that avenue open to the applicant.
Can I comment about
please.
So people in Cedar Hills are allowed to rent rooms under Airbnb. So we could just rent the rooms under Airbnb, but I prefer to give the city my money for a license and whatever else they would like me to comply with, rather than giving my revenue to Airbnb. So we have several homes that rent just rooms. And their yards.
That is true. And in fact, there's also legislation on Airbnb's HB 253 prohibits the city from restricting individuals from listing their homes on Airbnb short-term rental type sites. So that's another thing the city has to look into.
Yeah, actually, I was looking at that just for the group's information. So House Bill 253 was signed by the governor on the 24th. And it only covers, as Chandler said, homeowners from listing.
Yeah.
It allows them to list their home on the web.
Now, we're diverging here, but here's the issue is that, because we do have rental business licenses in the city, or if you have a home that's not owner-occupied and you rent it out, we in the past have required a rental business license. And the point of that was that we were finding that there was a degradation in neighborhoods because homeowners weren't keeping up on their property. These were the lawns that were unkempt. They had broken windows. They didn't have addresses. They had junk stored on the side of the homes. And in an effort to try to clean those up, these rental properties, we instituted their rental business license fee, and it really worked to clean up a lot of these homes. But this falls under SB 81, where we can no longer require a business license for that. So that's something that the city is going to have to discuss with the attorney and come back to council with some pending code.
Am I understanding that we are no longer going to be allowed to restrict Airbnbs within our community?
It's not that we can't restrict them, it's we can't restrict the listing of them. They painted the SB 253 as a First Amendment freedom of speech issue.
Like it's strictly
you can't restrict my speech to list my house, so it's strictly on the listing end. So we'll probably have to go see what the league recommends the cities do on this, because this is an issue for a number of cities, and it's a bigger issue for other cities. I don't think it's a monstrous issue for Cedar Hills. We only have in the whole city, I think.
But it's one we've discussed.
It's one we've discussed, yes. But, I mean, cities that are destination cities like Moab or St. George, this is a very, very big issue for them. For us, I think it's a fairly minor issue, which
so again, far
we have some time to get it right. But, yeah, we'll be watching that.
I've got a couple questions. Primary dwelling, there are two homes on the property.
There are two homes, but the primary dwelling is the bigger home, and that one does have the 206 feet of frontage on it. This doesn't include the home.
So you live in the large house, and you would continue to live there if you ran a B&B out of it. The other home, what is the use for the other home?
It was a guest house for my mother. She lived there for 10 years. She broke her hip, wheelchair, she's in assisted living. We rented just to a family in our ward.
Okay.
And it's not connected to your house?
No.
It's the one that's off a little bit to the east.
Yeah.
I'm just going in the direction of moving out of your house and running it, not living in the same building as those you're renting to.
I love our home.
Okay. You wouldn't want to move out of it is what you're saying.
No, I love our home.
But Chandler, that may, as we go further into this,
that could be a
condition that we may want to discuss.
That it be owner-occupied.
We do allow the owner-occupied rentals.
Yeah.
I've got several conditions that we will want to talk about at some point, but that may be one of them.
Let's talk about them right now. I think this is the time to talk about conditions.
Most of them are if we move over to the wedding.
Okay, well, let's leave it specific to the
Yeah, we B&B want to stay right on the B&B. Was there one other item? I guess the only other item, and we can get into conditions at some point, is do we want to, right now, four units are being asked for, if I understand right?
Yeah.
And do we want to make that a condition, or do we want to, it would be six max, is that right?
No. Mm-hmm.
It'd be five?
The property size allows for up to six, but they're only saying that they want to rent out four.
They have six max. Bedrooms in the home.
So do we make that a condition as well?
You can.
It seems like you'd only have the ability to go to five because it would be you've got a six-bedroom home, but you occupy one of those, so maybe that's not a big deal.
Four is fine with me. If you want to make that a condition, I'm good.
I don't think four or five is going to be a big deal. I don't personally.
One thing we need to consider is the unrelated to this project is whatever conditions we put there may become the standard for technically Airbnb in Cedar Hills, right? So if we go down this path of allowing them to rent out one to four bedrooms for a day or two or a week or two, that in some ways de facto potentially could become the standard, if you will, the precedence.
Well, I would say that the way that you arrive at that number is the standard, not necessarily the number. So if you look at their lot size and say, okay, you have a six-bedroom home, one of them being the owner-occupied bedroom, which leaves five bedrooms, and the lot size allows for at least two, but then given the additions in the size of the lot up to six, one of them being owner-occupied, leaves five bedrooms. That necessarily couldn't be said to be the same for a home in the Cedars, the wagon wheel here, that may be 1.15 of an acre. They obviously wouldn't meet that same standard, but they would have to meet some standard, and if they couldn't meet that one that the Moores have, then you're able to back it up. I'd say it's a standard five.
I think the number of bedroom in the code is pretty good about.
Yeah, it's
30. You got up 30,000 square feet,
which they're pretty rare. The size of the lot there.
Yeah, it is. It is.
The other two conditions we can talk about. Number one, you mentioned those signs being asked for right now. If in the future you do, I don't know if that needs to be a condition or if that's already in our code that's got to come before
they'd
the commission.
They'd have to meet the sign code.
They'd have to meet the sign code, and then depending on the type of sign, I believe, would be determining whether it came to this body or just approved on staff. Because that goes back to the First Amendment issue, being able to put a sign on private property.
Within our code, it's probably not a big deal.
They'd probably just work with staff, most likely.
Sign code.
Yeah. The other item is, do we want to discuss limiting it to the current owner so it's not passed on?
I think all conditional use permits are.
Is that right?
No, conditional uses run with the land.
They run with the land.
Okay,
they
so that
the land,
may be something we want to think about.
For a year,
it's
basically considered expired.
But if,
it 6 months?
It's 6 months.
Oh, it's, excuse me.
But if the property's sold with the added value that you can run it as a B&B to somebody that we don't know, do we want to allow that?
But I don't know that we can not allow that.
Okay, and that's
just
my question.
The size of the lot hasn't changed in that instance. The home hasn't changed in that instance. They still meet all of the requirements that led them to be granted that.
But she's really nice, and we don't know.
But now if that owner wanted a sign, then they would come back and they'd still have to comply with the city's sign permit.
If any of the conditions weren't met,
then it's a violation anyway.
As long as they're meeting the conditions.
In full disclosure, I went by and visited with them earlier today and walked the property and just wanted to see it myself up close. That was the reference earlier about who was out there. I was out there. One thing to consider potentially is, I believe that, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that you don't want to get into the hotel business. You just want to be able to rent rooms out in conjunction with your wedding events. So we may want to tie a condition to, you know, the rooms are for rent when they have an event within the week of or whatever. So they don't become a year-round hotel, if you will.
What if you did it as only rooms may only be rented, the Airbnb may only be rented by one set of guests at a time, rather than we have four rooms, we have four sets of guests?
Well, I would think that you'd have a bride set and a groom set.
But that's all the
couple themselves, right? I mean,
it's one set.
So, but you can maybe say, you know, associate or in conjunction with the event, right?
Group.
Associated with the group event. What's that?
How do you enforce that?
And do we care?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, there you go.
Well, that's a question for the group. I personally do care. I would not like to see them rent four bedrooms out every night of the year, right? And that may not be their intent, but it may be the new owner's.
But if you sold the place and somebody else purchased, that might be their intent.
Well, the interesting thing is we comply with every regulation that the city has, except we're not historic, except that our orchard is 117 years old. It's probably the most historic thing in Cedar Hills since Cedar Hills was built in a turkey farm.
Yeah.
You know, and the dirt is older. If that wasn't in there, it would meet every requirement.
Well, I was going to ask that. Chandler, what do you know why that's in there?
Most of the time, cities don't draft their own code. They're plagiarizing it.
I just wondered if it came.
I don't know why that didn't get weeded out. What's the resolution date on it?
On that one?
At the bottom, it says November
2011.
Is it 1849?
Yeah, we definitely didn't write that in 2004.
I can't take credit for this one.
Well, let's tackle one topic at a time so we can capture these.
Well,
and so let's talk about the conditions you raised a moment ago.
And related to this is, are these necessarily tied together? You know, what if we're okay, and I'm just throwing this out, what if we're okay with a B&B and not okay with a wedding thing? Do you want one to kill the other, or should
she,
these...
She may not. I, she, or may
should
or may
these
not.
Really
I,
be
they're
separate?
Really, they're really two separate conditional use permits.
When I read it, that's how I read it, and it seems like that would be more advantageous to the owner.
I think we should approve it as two separate conditional use permits because it's listed in the table as two separate conditional use permits if you look at 10.5.37.
Right. Right. But, and
but the success of both relies on the other, right?
I'm suggesting
that
don't.
I don't know that that's necessarily the case. Yeah, it may be the case, but you could run an Airbnb or a bed and breakfast without having a wedding venue.
Right.
Not every wedding venue has a B&B.
Or vice versa.
Vice versa. So.
We don't have a bed and breakfast.
Well, let's talk about the thought I raised about whether or not they should be permitted to rent up to 4 rooms any day of the year unrelated to an event.
What's the standard?
You know.
If you're going to create a condition on this, what's the standard?
That's what I'm trying to discuss is what should the standard be?
We don't get to discuss the standard. The standards are established in 10.5.37.
Yeah.
So the condition has to be based on the standard that's already established.
And because there's a section of code in 10.5.25, it has to be based on that.
Yeah, that too.
And there is nothing that says
10.5.25 is explicit.
Yeah, so this is where I say, like, if we're going to set out a condition, it has to be established based on the standard that's already established. And 10.5.25, I think, sets out most of the standards for a B&B.
But being a wedding venue is not one of those.
Being a wedding venue is not, it's not contingent upon being a wedding venue,
right.
Correct. But it also has to meet the other standards established in 10.5.37.
Sure.
Which, I mean, I don't know how a B&B is injurious to neighbors' health.
I think the... I'm going through the standards here. It kind of wraps things up with under E, so it's G, E, you know, is it compatible with the general plan? And, you know, I think what we should be looking at, kind of large, like big to small, is first off, what is the impact to the neighbors? And that's who we're really considering. The street, you know, the traffic going through and the neighbors, what is the impact? Now, we know that they have parking. We know that there is a very intimate relationship. When somebody stays at a B&B, it's not anonymous like a hotel, so you're having interaction with the guests. If there's unruly interaction or unruly people, we have the family right there to regulate and step in or call somebody if there's issues. I'm not seeing a huge impact. I mean, clearly we're not meeting this historic building requirement, which was a transplant from another code and basically prohibits bed and breakfast anywhere in the city. And so I don't think that should be the holdup. It seems like that's something that we should be able to work around.
If I can just add a footnote right there, our attorney asked that if the recommendation be made on the approval of that based on the changes in state law, HB 2253, and recommend the Planning and Zoning Department reevaluate that portion of the code. So any approval for B&B be contingent upon the change on that.
And I think if you throw that out, I mean, I think if we look at the intent of our requirements and our standards, I think functioning as a bed and breakfast, whether it's one day a month when there's a wedding or whether it's every day, that really doesn't change anything. I think it's met.
So is the simplest path for these homeowners to get onto their business, changing code takes time, right?
That's why we would approve it contingent upon the code being changed.
Right, but is it a faster path if we approve it with the recommendation that the city council designated because of the historic orchard there that's 117 years old?
But
lots of trees are old.
Orchard's not a structure. Orchard's not a structure.
Yeah,
it's a building structure.
But so, that's a stretch because it's not really relevant, right?
Yeah, I'm just trying to find a faster path.
They're right. It's probably the oldest orchard in the city. I don't know of any other orchard here. But I don't know. Changing land use code to section 10, here would be the timeline. We would have a public hearing in the next council or the next planning commission meeting, and then a public hearing in the following meeting, or probably two meetings after that in May. So it would be changed by the end of May. So you're looking at 2 months.
So,
whereas if you were to change the code, that's changing the code. Whereas if you were to just let the city council designate it a historic structure, I would have to learn what designates a historic structure, because I really don't know. I've never looked into this. It might be semi-arbitrary, but there might be a list of standards. And if it doesn't meet that list of standards, it may fall short. And then may come back with a change.
So would a faster path be for us to issue a temporary conditional use permit?
Well, just a conditional use permit contingent upon the change in that code.
But what if that code doesn't change, is my point. For some reason, the city council or whatever reason, you know, if it takes several months, can they move on and get the business license and bookings and all that? They're not prevented from
that. In the meantime, they could proceed as if they had full approval.
But they also have this kind of hanging over their head a little bit, like, what if that city council doesn't, you know? I mean, I think the city council probably would.
I think they would, based on the knowledge that there are no historic structures in the city. It'd be like saying, you can have a cattery as long as it's got flying cats. There aren't any flying cats, so...
So you've effectively eliminated that use. I think that's where you run into problem is you...
So you list it as a conditional use, but then you add this provision that doesn't allow it anywhere.
Right.
It's... To me, that's...
You get in trouble with that, in my opinion.
It's inconsistent. I think the city council's prudent enough to see that, so I don't worry too much about that.
What would prevent anyone who has enough square footage... from being a bed and breakfast, then? Could every house that meets those criteria...
I think the thing that would prevent them would be not wanting strangers in their home.
that's just...
But that's a valid point. If you take historic out, then all homes in Cedar Hills are around...
No, they got to have 200 feet of frontage. That
200 feet of frontage is a significant amount of property.
I believe yours has 206.
We have 206. We have 3 acres.
And they're one of the larger lots, too, in the city.
Okay. Well, as long as that...
So it really wouldn't be open to just anybody.
Frontage.
I don't believe. There'd be very few lots that would be able to have a bed and breakfast.
My opinion, just for what it's worth, if this came to the city council, I would definitely be more apt to change the code rather than change and try to say that that's a historical structure, because that makes me feel like we're kind of going around a rule for an individual, and that doesn't feel good to me. I'd want to change the code to make it fair for everybody.
I agree. I like that. Thank you.
What would the change look like?
Eliminate.
Probably just a lot of strike throughs here.
Okay.
And that whole provision, and then move them all up. Because I can't imagine something that would replace it at this point.
It's a strike through provision 2 there.
Yeah.
Historic structure.
Correct.
So, for sake of time, we haven't heard from everybody yet. Have we? Is any more discussion or questions around the bed and breakfast aspect? And
my concern is the historical building issue. I think that's been resolved.
Okay.
And can I just, in my defense, say I looked at lots in Cedar Hills, and I think not many meet that code. 206. And we actually have more than 206. Like
256. Or more. I measured it last night.
Almost 300. Our street, where they have a whole acre that meets that code.
There might be some big corner lots, but it's very few.
I do remember.
So the way this is worded on the agenda, are we doing two motions here? Or
yeah.
One? It seems like they're married together, but it seems like they're...
We put them under one. I put them under one memo because it was the same applicant.
Right.
But that's a good point. Like, should we do two?
I would prefer two motions for the record's sake. That's okay, Courtney. That way, each condition can be, if there's ever a question about it in the future, the conditions placed on the CUP can be directly associated with the bed and breakfast or the wedding venue.
I'll make a motion.
Can you do that?
I think I can.
Go for it. Just
kidding. I move that we approve a bed and breakfast. Let me get the right address here.
There's the motions at the bottom of the memo.
Yeah, I know that's there, but I'm going to do something different. So I move that we approve the conditional use permit for a bed and breakfast facility located at 991 4 North, 4000 West, the RR1 20,000 residential zone, subject to the following conditions: that city code 10525 B2 historic structure is struck from city code by the Planning Commission and City Council, and that a inspection according to 1025 B9 that the facility and building passes inspection by city officials, building inspector, and that the homeowner, the conditional use applicant is going to obtain a business license as required in section 12 of that code. And I'm going to throw another condition that the bed and breakfast, maybe it's already in here, be owner occupied.
We talked about the number of bedrooms. Did you want to add anything about that?
No, I think it's covered in the code here.
Okay.
That's my motion.
A second.
All right, any discussion before we vote? All those in the favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. We're now in the bed and breakfast business. So now we'll find out if you're in the wedding business in a minute here.
All right. So this one...
how big's the parking lot?
Start this one.
I didn't find the wedding venue in the code I was looking for.
Say that again?
I didn't find the wedding venue part of the code.
There's not a wedding venue part of the code, so don't look for it.
I think it's under the auspice of primary changes.
Yeah, so the staff, we've looked at this as a home license business, or home business license. And it doesn't meet the provisions of that code at all, because that's contained inside the dwelling. So we've got something very unique here that we want to look at. Mrs. Moore, you've had a number of weddings there already, correct? Mostly family members, you know.
We have 150 wedding venues on our property. We charged for one last year. We offered them to family, friends, the ward, numerous, you know, kids that grew up chose to have their weddings there. We've also had a ton of missionary farewells. The state has used our property, gatherings, our ward has used it. We had an emergency health and wellness fair there that was state run. So probably every year we have about 8 to 10 venues on the land. We've chosen to just share it and to just open it up to people who we know. But what's happened is people, as they have been to a wedding there, or family or friends have said, I've got to rent this. So sometimes people want an outside venue. They want that magic that happens in an orchard, and we're willing to do it for no charge, but it would be nice to, time is valuable. Upkeep on that orchard, that 3 acres is expensive. And if we go through some of the proposals and changes to make it more compliant, they're very expensive.
So they've been very generous with the use of their property, I believe. And so, like I said, going back to the standards for granting CUP, the conditional use permit that they're actually applying for here is a change in the primary use of residential dwelling. And the primary use would be then designated as commercial. Now, the underlying use would still more than likely most of the time be residential, so keep that in mind. So it's not like it's not like we're opening up a grocery store in a home. But with that being said,
I got to interrupt you here.
Please do.
If we change the primary use of the structure from residential to something else, can you then run a bed and breakfast on it? Because that, in the code, says it's primarily a residence that you're then renting
out. It is a residence. That hasn't changed.
Don't get hung up on the word primary.
That is the word I'm looking at, primary use.
So I think it's allowing for another use in the code. It's allowing for this type of business to occur outside rather than restricted
to be inside the building. Right.
And that's where I'm not having any hang-ups on that. I'm really not. Like she said, she's had numerous events at this location. You said 150-ish?
Not over 150. And the thing of it is we haven't really, because we're not ever taking any money, you know, with your land, people can park. When the ward comes to do a big event, they can park. When the men and women come, they park up and down the street. And if I were to be granted a use, we have to have parking on our land. And the parking will be... There's room for 70 spots, but it means that we have to put up barrier fences so that traffic, parking cars, no children are hurt. And
that's not in the code, right? So they're required to have a barrier fence.
That's the condition.
It's not a requirement. It's limited.
No. That's the condition. So the standard is that the underlying zone is protected, and that maybe one of those concerns is that noise.
I understand. So I'm just trying to make sure she doesn't have safety.
The point I was getting at was that they've had many events at this location, and the city has not received any complaints from neighbors. The one complaint we had was from a rival reception center. Is that right?
That's probably not apparently
to
topic.
And it's not. It's not. Well, it is. I think it actually is, because I think they've shown a propensity to respect the underlying zone as it is, with the use that they've been using as. So, looking at those standards, you're looking at the health, safety, general welfare of persons residing in the general vicinity. How does this affect the neighbors? You know, in the case of the Airbnb, there's not a whole lot of effect on the neighbors. In the case of a wedding venue outside, there may be some effect on the neighbors. And that's where these standards come into play. And the conditions are based on the standards. So, yeah, there's nothing in the code that says you will construct a wall. But there is something that says that it's compatible with the general plan and protect the quality of the underlying zone and all lighting aesthetics. So let's just take that for example, that you're not going to have a million watt candle shining into a neighbor's bedroom because that's what the bride wanted. Those are the kind of conditions that you have to work around. Is like, what's the lighting going to look like? What's the restrictions on light? What's the restrictions on noise, parking, traffic?
What are the restrictions? What are the requirements for lighting in parking areas, though? And does that translate then into they have to have parking lighting?
Well, that's in commercial.
But if we're making this a commercial use,
you can allow for some lighting in commercial, but then you have to make sure that that is mitigated on the neighbors. Any effect does not translate to a detrimental effect on any neighboring property.
But I guess I'm still going back to the change in use, because I mean, how is this that much different than having a daycare?
It's outside for once.
It's outside.
Well, my wife did a preschool for years at our house, and they were outside for half the time.
I think the primary use of the daycare was inside. They may have gone outside.
Yeah.
But the primary use here is outside. Do you have weddings inside your home?
If the weather becomes inclement, we can bring them in, but I hate it because we have to move all the furniture. I despise it.
So are you saying you never schedule indoor weddings? It's
no.
Plan B?
So we can only use the orchard between June and September. We can't have more than one wedding, maybe three weddings a month. Like a wedding every week would be tough because the grass turns to mud. And so we're very limited that we can have about 10 venues. That's why we've kept it We've lived there 17 years. We've got, you know, probably 170 venues, but if we do more than that, 150 weddings and 20 other events, it the orchard becomes unmanageable. It's the grass isn't lovely. You're walking in mud. Most people with a venue where they have a building in that outside, they make people stay on pathways. Ours is very different. That we, you know, you can walk on the grass, but you have 100 people on your grass for 2 or 3 hours. It's pretty destroyed. You've got to wait a week or two to let it fluff back up, or pretty soon you have mud.
I think that wasn't clear in what I read here. So I think that's something we want to make sure is clear, and maybe it's a condition or whatever, that this is an outdoor venue. I don't mind that it's already scheduled and sometimes you got to move inside. I don't think that's a big deal. But that what we're looking at here, if I understand correctly, is an outdoor venue, and then we need to look at it as an outdoor venue. What does that mean? You know, I go to the website. It's called The Villa, I think, right? Which makes it sound like it's weddings at our house, in our house. So that's where I started to get confused. There's other language on the website, and I know you need to get through what you're introducing.
Oh, no, you're, keep going.
I mean, it talks about 600 plus people there. That's something we need to talk about. One of the comments is the last guest left at 2 a.m. That's something we need to talk about. There's light and noise and cars and so forth involved in that. So that's something that may influence, if we do go ahead with this, what conditions we may want to impose. Is this just weddings, or is it weddings and receptions?
So our music is always off by 9.
Another condition, possibly, that I think it says 9:30 in the write-up.
It depends on what day it is. Either way, that is the point of the noise ordinance, though. You're right.
Before we move off that point, though, I mean, the application here says for wedding venue.
Right. Receptions are different.
I presume that corporate parties or, I mean, other...
I mean, you could easily change that to an event venue.
Right.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying we're limiting this to weddings.
Wedding's a nice, quiet.
No, I don't think you are. You're changing.
In Utah.
I mean, it's not a conditional use for a wedding venue. It's a conditional use for a change in the underlying use of the property.
I'm just saying what the agenda says.
It does. But that's not.
So I'm just trying to understand.
But to David's point, may be a condition.
That it's only weddings?
Yeah, or something like that. You know?
I'd like to hear, well, homeowners, what would you like to have it limited to?
Well, we've had homecomings on there. We don't charge.
Not against receptions. Asking what it is.
It's primarily receptions.
Receptions of any manner, really. Receptions of any kind. It could be a corporate party. It could be a wedding reception. It could be a family reunion.
So you're using reception in the word of a gathering.
I'm just pointing out that the agenda says wedding venue. I just want to understand, is the purpose limited to weddings, or is it going to be more than weddings?
I think.
Let me ask you this. Is the impact different?
Well,
between a wedding and a reception?
Let's hear what Mrs.
In my opinion, yeah, it is.
What is your desire, right?
Because that's where it's going to matter. That's
What is your desire? Wedding venues?
I thought a wedding venue meant reception.
And that's okay. That's okay.
That's fine.
We just want to make sure
wedding
we understand.
Reception. I just didn't know if you want to go beyond that and do corporate parties, family reunions, any other kind of reception.
Because this isn't my primary business, I do it because I love it. It makes me happy.
Yeah.
Parties make me happy. Right. We have set the price so high that no corporation in their right mind would rent our venue. We've set it at $32.95, which really weeds out a lot of busy traffic. We're not going to book it that much. It's a very expensive wedding venue, and corporations are going to rent the room over in some restaurant where it can be, you know.
Right.
I don't think we'll get that, but I would be more than happy to limit it to wedding reception, unless it's my personal use and I could missionary farewell it, maybe blessing it, board activity it. I don't want anyone to control that part of this.
So when we make our motion, we should make our motion with wedding / reception.
What if you made it that the business nature of the property is for wedding events and reception events? Because that's personal use of the property.
Yeah, I just want to make sure we have a motion that's broader.
Quite frankly, if they're hosting a baby blessing or a missionary farewell there,
well, personal use.
I don't care.
That's personal.
Yeah, that's personal use. We're not taking any money.
I think that limiting those uses goes above and beyond what we need to be doing. I mean, they could use it for a corporate luncheon or whatever they want to. I would think as long as they're not, again, harming the neighboring area or not causing a hazard by stuffing so many cars in there that a fire truck can't get in, or those kinds of things, that there's access and egress and all of those. I think those are more important than whether or not, you know, my business group is having a lunch in there, or somebody's having a reception there, or somebody's blessing a baby, or whatever the case is. I don't think that matters nearly as much as the impact that those activities would have.
And I agree with that. I just make sure we have a motion that's broader than wedding. That's what I'm bringing up. Is that we actually commit that to be broader than wedding.
No, I agree. That's a good point. Sorry, go ahead.
I agree with Steve and with David as well. I mean, the impact is what we're looking at here. What the celebration is, you know, the reason for being there, you know, is not the important thing that we should be looking at. And I'm sure that you probably know your neighbors and maybe in your ward, have we received any input from people that would be directly
impacted? One person came to council meeting last week and saw the sign on your property, and they said, please don't let them subdivide their land. Because that's usually why I see signs on properties, because they're public hearing on subdividing land. So yeah, they were like, I just don't want to see a subdivision there. But once I said, oh, they're doing, trying to change it so they can do weddings there, they're like, oh, great. And like I said, they've had weddings there before, and we haven't gotten noise complaints from them.
So for sake of time, I suggest we focus a little bit on one topic at a time. Let's start with lighting, for example. If there's no interest in the group and placing conditions on lighting, we'll move on from lighting.
Well, but I think what she just said is relevant.
We have two lights.
Right.
That's the only lights we use is a Christmas light. And some sometimes on the table. Yeah.
They're pretty. I've driven by you at night when they're on. They're pretty nice looking lights.
Yeah, they're pretty. Yeah. I don't think
how specific does it have to be, Chandler? Can we say that the lighting can't adversely affect the neighbors, and as long as the neighbors don't complain, then we don't worry about it.
Because I do think that should be part of the conditions.
No, I think it's. I just.
But we don't have to say you can have 600 Christmas lights, but not 650.
Yeah, I don't want to go that far.
I found four items that needed to be addressed, and that was lighting, noise, parking, and traffic.
Right.
Yes.
To me, those are the four. Everything else is kind of.
Let's start with lighting.
So let's start with lighting. It's limited to Christmas lights in the trees is what you'd currently do right now. We talked about lighting in the parking lot. I mean, there's ways to do that where it's like simple, I don't know, those solar powered little garden lights that you just have to just light it just a little bit. I don't know, just throwing that out there.
What about automobile lights? Sometimes when we do developments, we have to put up barriers because...
Did you see the site plan?
Yeah,
the way it looks like is that the automobile lights, they actually just pull straight in and they actually face interior into the property.
But as they're driving out...
Right.
But as they're driving out 100 cars into the neighbor's
front yard.
Okay,
so that's a good point. We had talked also about... And this, when I say we had talked about my conversations with Mrs. Moore, installing a fence.
That's where I was going.
That would shield a lot of the lighting and a lot of the noise.
And that's, that's where I was going with it, is how do we mitigate that?
I think with the fence, if your concern is lights shining through to other neighbors, I think you can mitigate that through a fence and possibly other sorts of vegetation. Like, you have trees back there.
And the fence we chose is...
This is more... Can we stick with lighting? Let's just stick...
Lighting.
But, all right, fence may be part of lighting.
The property on the left of us, to the north of us, is impossible for any car lights to shine into their home because they have themselves an 8-foot cement wall.
Right. They're above.
Their home is quite far above ours.
What about hours of lighting? Should these lights be turned off at a certain time? What does the group think about that?
I don't know.
Do we limit Christmas lights to turn off at a certain time?
I don't think so.
That would be the question I would be, because I think if it ever got challenged, I think that would be the question that someone would ask. Because essentially they're just using our Christmas lights.
I think the primary concern.
That's right.
Admittedly, I've just driven past in your little roundabout in the front. That's right on the way here. I'm sure you're already here, but I stopped and pulled in there and took a look. The place that car lights would be a problem would be your neighbors across the street.
As you're pulling out,
everybody's going to be shining on their lawn
at 2 in the morning.
At their building, as you pull out, turn right or left. To the west of you.
I don't know how you mitigate that.
I have no idea how you.
No, there's only one property, because the one
up here. I
think. Yeah, that one. This one sits a lot higher.
And their house is on the hill.
But the
one that's
aren't.
Northwest of you, the one that's southwest of you looked like it was closer to level.
Your intention was to have a one-way.
I could be wrong.
A one-way route, right? So if you exited where there wasn't a home, is that where the car light was going to work? It's on the north side.
Our exit roads,
yes,
are right on the property line.
That's on the north property line, right?
The north property line is on the property line of the two houses, and so is our south. They're the property lines of the house across from us.
It's the south. It looks like south.
The south is the one that's less impacted, right? Yeah.
If you pulled in on the south and you were pulling out after you're done, your lights would shine in the north. You'd hit that cement wall, so they're not interfering with any neighbors there. And as you turn west, you're saying that the homes there are higher, so that they wouldn't be interfering with the homes there. So you're just saying, maybe as a condition to circulate the traffic the other way to reduce any lighting concerns.
And I think that totally addresses that problem.
What are your thoughts?
You just have to reverse your parking orientation.
It would just come in the other way.
No, all these have to be
flipping.
Oh no! Okay, I understand. That was a good
one. Can you make a note of that, Chandler, as a condition?
Yeah.
So we make a motion. So should we go on to parking, or do you guys want to talk about lighting some more?
I think lighting's okay.
Lighting, I think we beat that dead horse.
Yep.
Let's beat it some more. Parking. One question I have is, and I'm looking at the map here, and all these parking stalls that are here. What are the dimensions of these stalls?
I thought they mentioned
it. It said they're 10 feet wide.
10 foot wide, right?
10 by 15.
10 by 15?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's standard parking. It's still wide, isn't it?
On one side, they're 10 by 20. On the north side, they're 10 by 20. Yeah.
So it's like a truck parking.
And the other side is.
Yeah. You know,
normal truck parking.
And I'm very sorry. I apologize. I'm going to change my own encouragement. I want to go back to lighting for a second. I forgot about something.
Wait, you can't go back.
I want to go back to lighting.
Unforgivable.
So on the east side of the property, there's this irrigation ditch, right? And you're going to have parking back there. And right now, hardly anybody goes back there because it's not part of your venue per se. It's just stuff back there. But now we're talking about putting parking stalls back there with an open ditch.
No, they're gonna. They said they're gonna
cover. Sorry, that one. The only way that becomes a future parking lot is if that ditch becomes.
No. I'm talking about the parking stalls around the perimeter of the house on the east side of the home.
Right. They said if they do that, they're gonna enclose. They're gonna cover the ditch.
No, that's in regards to the future parking lot, I believe.
Oh. Okay.
So they will have parking stalls on the east side of the house, just as they do in the north and the south. There may be water running in that ditch.
Correct.
It's dark. It's open. Don't want to be, no.
We can solar light along the ditch, solar light the whole ditch line. We can do that.
So that, I'm just saying that would be one requirement is to add some lighting on that side of the house where the ditch is.
Okay. Lighting or picket fence or something.
Yeah, a little white picket fence.
Accomplishes the same thing. I never fell in a ditch except on purpose.
No, the ditch is right there.
Something to get people out of the ditches, right?
We're going to talk about the ditch here in a minute on safety as well.
Yeah, I guess that is the deal.
But it seems to me to be relevant to have lighting.
I think lighting would actually be better than a fence just because you'd be able to see it when you're pulling out at night. With a fence, you may not.
Even people might not see that. They might actually drive into the ditch if it's dark back there and not paying attention.
I think solar lighting is just kind of as an indicator light would be good. There.
I think that's a great idea.
All right. I can't imagine it would be.
This might have been in there. Would you park facing towards the ditch or park facing towards the house?
Towards the house.
Okay. That was in there.
I'm going to throw it in there.
Okay.
All right. So let's move on to parking then. I apologize for going back. Time was long and I'm curious to take us back. So. All right, so we got the dimensions of the parking stalls. How many are there on here?
65 for the wedding, then 5 more for the home in the back. That's
so
70.
Of these 150 some odd events held over the many years, any guess of how many cars on average come to a wedding?
About 60, maybe 50.
At any specific given time? Or?
Well, we had one time one of our neighbors had a wedding at the same time we did. There was one of their children. One of our children, one of their children. There's lots of parking. It was kind of, it went everywhere. So actually us putting parking on our property would be helpful. We were just called by our neighbors to the to the south and said, hey, we're having a wedding on June 10th on our property. And it would, so the Jensens, they have a big lot. They're going to get their landscaping in, their fence, they're putting in a big pool. And they do a lot of events also. So they could. No.
Hey, they're in Cedar Hills.
Are they? Okay.
Are they, and so our parking on that south side of the property that fits about 20 cars would actually be helpful for their events. They call us because they want to borrow all our tables, chairs, linens, which we won't have an event that weekend, so good.
So 65 stalls you feel is adequate?
I'm sure they'll
more than adequate.
Cars on the... Yeah, well, I'm sure that, there'll be some cars on the street.
Well, I know there will because that's the stuff people are.
Yeah, but
not everybody's going to use a parking.
We will have someone who parks for us. This man, that's how he helps my business.
He's kind of the parking guy.
He's the parking guy.
Would you have a...
Sometimes they don't go baby and they park on the street.
Would you have designated handicap? And is there handicap access to the home?
We do. We keep, that's what we usually have a parking attendant available. That's me. And I usually keep spots open for handicapped and elderly, and I park everyone else around. And when they come, when I see them, and I park them in a close area where a handicap can access.
We can designate a handicap, and we do have handicap access through our garage. But heaven forbid that anyone comes in.
Yeah.
And also with weddings, there's a constant flow of cars. Nobody stays. Not all 65, the same 65 cars stay. It's not doing the whole event. It's
not all of them, not all of them.
So, a car is going to leave every now and then, a new one will come in.
That's my understanding. The at least initially anyway, maybe someday you may change this, but the road around and including the parking stalls is not going to be paved?
It's road grade.
Road grade, right.
Road grade. I doubt they'll ever pave it. Yeah, I really don't like the look of, it's a villa.
Yeah.
And I want it to, and road grade seems to be as durable as asphalt, which breaks down. And a concrete road is just...
I agree that it would ruin your aesthetics. I'm only, my thinking is that if you, you know, if you have a parking lot with, you know, the painted lines, you know, there's really 65 stalls here, use every stall. If it's just kind of open, you may not really have 65 stalls because you're not really kind of guiding people in a specific spot.
You know, we may chop them, but they won't be, you won't see them from the venue. They'll be inside the fence. They'll be outside. The venue's inside. I don't think we'll have to chalk them because people have bigger, smaller cars, and some people can park as well. And you know, they'll just as they come in, they'll park.
There's no way people park.
As a matter of note, city does require parking to be on a hard surface, and road base is considered hard surface. So that would be that portion of the code.
Any other comments or questions about parking from this body?
Does that include traffic, or is that another?
No, traffic. I would say traffic is a separate issue.
Okay.
Want to talk about traffic now?
Now, are there any conditions to mitigate or to control parking? Was there anything?
Aside from what's presented in the site plan?
Aside from what's presented in the site plan.
Should there be a maximum number of cars allowed in this area for these events?
I don't know how you would control that, yeah.
Well, the great thing is, even with the cars parked, our road is wide enough for emergency vehicles to get around. We always make that a condition of that back road.
I think you would just limit it to the number of stalls that they've applied for.
It seems like you'd want to put most of the cars onto the property, not onto the road. So, like, if they get more than 65, fantastic, and they're not on the road.
Well, and future plans, but I don't want it to be a condition because I know we can't afford it for a while because I pay my taxes to this city and then they can build this, but I don't pay any taxes to build my stuff. Just a little way out there. We have a back acre that we would like to just road grade. It was our holding pond for our water, but we've got to pressurize irrigation. And so that we were thinking of filling in and just doing a parking lot in the back. Which would accommodate another 50 or 60 vehicles. So
I think you said 75 vehicles.
Yeah, we could make it. I mean, there's a ton of space there.
What's preventing you from doing that at the outset?
I just said financial. It's a huge chunk of money, and I don't have a tax.
Yeah, but do you have a quote for that? Do you have a sense of how much money it is? How much is it?
I think it's going to be about $8,000 to $10,000 from what I've. From the excavation of putting dirt back in and then road base and lighting.
And
we can't do
the barrier fence is a similar cost, correct?
Barrier fence is gonna be $8,000.
Right.
Because we picked a style barrier fence, but we can't do that back parking until the ditch gets covered for water, which we're gonna get into.
Right. Personally, this is unrelated to the application, but just the aesthetics of your property is beautiful, right? And now we're going to put, you know, for these events, we're going to stick a whole bunch of cars around it and a barrier fence around your trees. And it almost seems like it'd be wonderful if you somehow could just skip to putting all the parking in the back and not having a barrier fence and keep that orchard.
I would always have a barrier fence. Because even traffic going back to that parking lot would be a danger to any small children. That fence is for my personal safety.
Right.
Plus, the wall to the north is a cement wall. It's not lovely. The barrier fence that we picked is lovely.
So you want a fence, is what you're saying.
The other one's going to have a pool, and perhaps I'll be having a great pool party. And so I kind of want a barrier against that.
Okay.
All right. Future parking is, it's a small item, but the northeast corner.
That's correct.
Okay. It says Northwest in here. It's a small... When it first said Northwest, I was looking at Google Earth thinking, that's right out on the road. I don't want to do that. That's okay. It's not part of what we're approving anyway.
You're talking about traffic now?
Yeah. So there, I don't have any conditions for the parking other than that the applicant will install a barrier fence.
The only one I would consider is handicap, but I don't know. Seems like a business venture should meet the disability laws that are out there. I don't know if handicap, designated handicap stalls is
I'll put we'll designate handicap stalls.
Is a law, right? It's probably supposed to be one for every number of parking stalls. I don't know.
No, that could easily be done, and I'll show you what we can do it. And I already know in my head. So, right? Yeah. We're looking at the house this way.
Well, that being right by the church, and the base number, there's not really any impact except on that road.
I can't
read
my own fingers. 23, 24, 25.
Because all the baseball field and the church both are by traffic.
Oh, sorry, please.
And
then,
fire department.
The ones that are along
so we're just
road,
right down from that, right?
Yeah,
the
just
road to
around the corner
south,
and down.
After
three,
the roundabout,
four houses, four houses.
Those could be designated as handicapped the because then they could get out of their car and be on the
plus four the real homes and streets.
These here, I'm assuming.
2021
this is
2021 and 2022. Those could be designated as handicapped.
It is. It's not busy. I drive it every day. It's not nearly
and then Mr. Moore can spend less time.
My point is, it's
before people do their stall, right?
You could right. Well, it's
arterial.
Yeah.
Control parking intentions because you just have chaos if you don't.
Right.
Yeah, it's to do.
Okay, traffic. You have questions about traffic? Have comments or do you have anything to prepare for Glenn Chandler on parking or traffic?
No. Sir, we're just having a sidebar about that area already has baseball field and church and fire department and, you know, right at that intersection that's close to what's going on there. So I don't know that there's any undue impact from being four houses in versus the church and the baseball field and the fire department and everything else that's going on right there. Unless it affects the neighbors in some way where they can't have access to the road.
If it blocks their driveways, if it blocks access to their own properties, I'd say that's where it becomes an issue. But right. Past that, I'm not really sure where you have an issue.
The 4,000 West, there's kind of an arterial road. The only problem road is the Monson Lane piece of junk thing.
Let's,
that she lives on.
Let's stick to the topic at hand.
No, but that is a hand.
I already know the issues with that road.
That is
germane to the discussion because people are going to be driving in that to get to your house.
Not if they're smart.
Not if they're smart, but you
know. But if they're following Google, they may.
There's proper public access to this building.
There is. On that road, there's a place where the Pleasant Grove irrigation ditch collapsed the road. And we're working with them to get them to fix that.
Isn't that a PG road?
No, that's ours.
It's 4,000. 4,000 is PG though, right?
4,000 North or 4,000 West? 4,000 West is more hybrid.
Okay.
We share it.
I don't see there being a traffic issue because the road is designed as an artillery road to your point.
No, it
can handle the traffic to this location.
The only comment I would have, and it's already been discussed, if you enter on the north side, as drawn, all those parking stalls are great. And if you continue around and exit on the south side, all those parking stalls are drawn wrong. You don't want them slanted the other way. It's not, this is just hash marks on the drawing. If you do that, it's all good.
It doesn't matter.
So if we don't think the south, then the ones on the south are correct. It's the ones on the back and the ones in the north that need to change.
You don't want them like this, you want them like that. To have a go around.
You don't need to redo your artwork.
No, don't.
Yeah, no, it's not.
That's not.
And that road is that area is so wide, it's just huge.
So on traffic, Dave.
Yeah.
We talked right at the beginning about 12 events a year.
Yeah.
I know I've got family who live next to the football stadium, and 8 times a year they just sort of put up with it. The lights, the sound, the traffic, and so it's okay. So as we talk about some of these issues, if we're not going to talk about what they're doing there, and I get that, but do we, as a condition, are we going to consider limiting the number of times that this takes place? It mitigates these issues in other circumstances.
I think you can. You just have to be careful because it has to be based on a standard again. I hate to keep beating that drum, but if you're going to say you can't have more than 12 events, there has to be a reason based on those standards to not have more than 12 events.
I don't know that I have that standard other than precedent in other similar places where there's a large gathering housed within a residential neighborhood where the only mitigating...
There is something in the code for general welfare, which is broad enough to your point. I mean, you could say that for the general welfare of persons or properties in the vicinity.
Yeah. We just have to say this is why we issued this condition. It can't just be we just only wanted you to have 12. Yeah. There has to be a real germane reason.
I mean, it starts to mitigate some of these issues.
Well, if it's traffic is your concern and you're saying it's limited to X number of events per year, then it is mitigating the traffic on some degree just because you're saying rather than having an event every single night and traffic every single night, you're saying that the traffic is limited in this manner because it's a residential neighborhood.
Which I know you don't want to do. And you
won't.
Right. And I'm kind of...
We're looking beyond you, though, to a future homeowner as well, right?
I just, again, in a residential setting, when we're placing something that will generate noise and light, and as you said yourself, we're not going to eliminate it. We're just going to try and mitigate it.
Right.
One way to mitigate it is to limit the number of times it's going to happen.
There you go. And I think that's your defense then.
What would be a number that would be satisfactory to the Moors? Maximum number.
So
maximum number of events in a given year.
No,
that you paid and charge money for.
Licensed events. Mm-hmm. Events that fall under your business license.
I say it's perfect. So June, July, August, September, 12. That's the most.
Why don't we just
charge it like 15?
Why don't we say 20?
Oh, that's like more than I would ever.
But we have to look at this beyond you.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
20 events for the general welfare of those in the city.
I'm really throwing it out there for discussion.
The baseball field, we can't say you can only have 20 baseball games, and it's across the fence from them. I mean,
that's purpose has always been a baseball field. This is changing.
Yeah, and it's in a different zone. It's in a public zone. You could get hit by a baseball in their backyard. So
that'd be a good hit.
That'd be a heck of a hit.
Frank Thomas at bat.
A golf ball name. Golf ball. I mean, you know.
It sounds like they've already kind of maximized the events. Kind of with, you're talking about more than three of these weddings a month, and then you have a huge impact on the property. And there's been you've indicated a history of 15, 17 years of this. I don't know. It sounds like it's probably, everybody in the area is probably pretty used to it. I don't know what's changing. Once they start charging, if anything, they would have less because happening more than charged events. But I don't know what impact changes.
I don't see that limiting the number of events one way or the other makes a substantial impact on the use of the property. Like, they're not going to change anything if we put an arbitrary number on it. Well, they're not going to.
It's the impact on the vicinity.
But this conditional use permit, if they decide they are sick of doing that and they want to move, then the new owner gets that permit.
I get what you're saying.
The people from Vegas that move up and turn this into whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a change of use. It is within a residential neighborhood, and I get what you guys are saying, and I'm all for property rights, believe me. It just, I'm looking for a way that might mitigate some of these conditions, and I'm offering that, and it's been offered to us, it seems. I'm just saying I differ in opinion. I think that limiting the number of events would be a good condition.
It's just my opinion. Given that it is a residential neighborhood.
When we make our motion, we can have that in there and people can vote yes or no.
Yeah, it may just come down to a vote, and that's okay.
I get the general welfare and limiting, but how do we come up with that number? Why is it a standard, and how does it apply to everyone else?
Yeah, that's where you get tricky. Because I understand both sides of the argument here, but the number has to be the best.
I think the standard's already been set. They do about 12 events a year, and that's been the standard use in the past. That's been what the community has not complained about. And so if they want to do 12 a year and we say 20, we're actually giving any more latitude even more than what they've done.
Well, if you were looking at future, there is going to be some time when we're going to pass away, and that means, let's say Stonegate buys the property and runs a wedding every other day. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's, I understand the reason we're happy to limit it, because in the future, what would prevent Stonegate from buying it and having it and then running weddings nonstop? And so, you know, I don't have any problem limiting it to whatever number, 20, you know, that's fine.
We're talking about 20 days a year impact on the neighborhood versus the possibility of it being
100.
But, I mean, I would rather say you can limit it to 150 cars rather than 20 events, because there's a capacity limit there versus a arbitrary, this is how many times you can use it for this purpose.
But from a business standpoint, how would you do that?
I mean, how does fire code say that you can only have a certain number of people in a building or in an area based on
outside?
What's that?
You're outside.
You have to consider the impact on the community. So would you like to have the same wedding song virtually every night heard from your home? Because you're adjacent.
You don't like Unforgettable?
No. You get old, right? I mean, would you like to have 65 cars next door to you almost every day of the summer? So that's the impact I think we're talking about is...
But
it's a change in use, right? So the use has been around 12 events a year. Nobody's complained and seems to be okay.
Well, but if there's no noise and there's no people blocking my driveway and the lights aren't bugging me, why does it matter how many they do? I guess that's my... If they've mitigated all of these other problems, why are we putting a limit on the number of events if we've already addressed everything else?
Well, because...
Because I think this use is occurring in a residential area,
mm-hmm.
And I think if you were to, you know, at some point, then that would become a commercial. You know, if it was every night, that's a commercial use. That's not a
which is kind of the condition, right? That this is a commercial use part of the time.
Right. So what we're trying to do is
limit what size part of the time is.
Yeah. Limit it. So it's not, doesn't become excessively commercial. We want to keep it, you know, as residential as possible.
Well, keep in mind, we're only mitigating. We're not eliminating these potential.
So let's say that somebody buys a property years from now, and they don't take the steps, or they don't follow the conditions that have been in place. We revoke the CUP. It's no longer a wedding venue.
But we're not approving a wedding venue.
Well, they no longer have a CUP. Reception. It reverts back to a residential.
We're not even approving a reception.
You're approving the change in the residential.
That's all we're approving. And
you're not approving what they're doing. They're approving
right.
that it's a.
And I get that. So
if they don't follow the conditions that were placed on it, assuming that those conditions were reasonable, then the CUP is null and void at that point.
So quick. I suggest that we make the motion that we include that in there and people can vote yay or nay, or we can do a straw vote now if we want to do a a la carte vote on a specific.
I'm going to say no on the limit to the number of events.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is anybody else feel that way? Just curious. All right. So we've done traffic. What was the fourth one, Chandler?
Noise. We haven't talked about noise.
Noise.
I think the easiest thing to do here would be just to follow the noise ordinance.
Yeah,
follow the noise.
That's fine with me.
That's what we don't need. Yeah,
probably true.
That generally means that noise at these events is wrapped up 9:30, 10 o'clock at night.
Right.
So does the fence become a condition, or do we need to make that a condition?
I think it's a condition because, as a neighbor, I think that they would want to. This is just staff's recommendation. There, like I said, we're mitigating, not eliminating. In order to mitigate noise and light, I think a fence is necessary. That doesn't do much for parking and traffic, obviously, but I think we've discussed other things for those. So in my mind, I see the fence as being, as kind of extending that buffer.
You mentioned that's a sound fence. You picked a special fence.
There's one called Simtech. It's a recycled material that's thick 2 inches, and it's at Home Depot. It's listed as a sound barrier. We had an estimate for a cedar fence, it's 3,000. Simtech fence, $8,000. But I feel it's important for me to be as compliant as I can because I love this city. We've lived here 34 years. There were 17 on Bill Park and 17 on this property. And I just love Cedar Hills. And so I want it to be as the best that we can do. It looks like wood, it's not a stone thing. That's the fence we need to put in. And we can condition.
So 2 inches thick, it's got mass, which is why it can be
absorbed.
It's also very strong. This car would park into it and hit it. A cedar fence could come over. This thing is, I talked with the Home Depot dudes and they were like, oh no. You've got deep pockets. This is the fence for strength, for wind shear, for all the things, for noise barrier, and it's listed as a noise barrier on their website.
So you're putting this fence on the property, right?
We're putting 100 feet on the north, 100 feet on the south.
Okay.
But the west is a 12-foot high.
East.
The east, sorry. It's a 12-foot high wild, rose hedge that's like 8 foot thick.
It's pretty deep on the.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
So that's what I'm thinking. This fence is that you're proposing is on the property line.
No, I think it's drawn not on the property line. It's inside
it's
the property line.
It's between the parking stalls.
This is where I'm going. Is this the barrier fence or is this the? So this is between the parking stalls and the orchard.
Correct.
That's what I want.
So it's not the
property
line.
Line.
It's inside the property.
Inside the property.
Oh yeah, the property line. We have a 20-foot.
You can see the fence.
Yeah, that's where I was coming from. Sounds like the question he's asking is it on the property line? The answer is clearly no.
That's what the answer is no. Yes, that's
it's about 40 feet within the property.
Yeah, I see it on the map. I looked on the on the drawing.
That's our property
line. How high is the fence? Is it 6 feet?
It is a 6-foot fence. I think higher than that makes you look like you're Gestapo. I just
don't
know. I lowered the
razor wire on the top.
No Gestapo.
Lower than that, they really don't make.
I don't know how effective it would be.
Hold
either. I don't know how effective it would be either if it was lower than 6 feet.
No, it wouldn't be a sound barrier. You're right.
As I'm thinking about it,
The fencing ordinance does not allow for 6-foot fences in front yard setbacks.
The
fencing ordinance does not allow for 6-foot fences in the front yard setback.
Which is how far back from?
30 feet.
To the back of the house.
To the back of the house.
To the side. So if you were to look at a site plan.
Hold on.
Can I see that for a second? So here's the site plan. This is looking west.
Yeah.
Everything under my finger here
is front yard.
Yeah, our fence ordinance is awesome.
No, that's why I'm just realizing this right now. Because I was thinking about it back here on the property line. That's why I was clarifying this.
Variance.
Well, let me ask this. If we invoke our noise ordinance, are we really...
Does the fence even needed?
Right. Do we have to require a fence if the venue is always complying with our noise ordinance?
I think the way to overcome this is it's a safety issue. You have a lot of pedestrian traffic
so deep.
On the ground.
That's the problem. Your lot,
young kids, et cetera.
Your lot.
And controlling that pedestrian traffic.
See, most homes sit 20 feet back.
Not a lot of cars are under 25 feet. Right?
What do we have to do?
Cramp four times that
variance.
What's relying on?
What's the building setback in that zone?
It's like
25.
Yeah,
25 or 30.
I mean, maybe it comes out to the building setback. Because I don't know that you'd. I mean, those first 25 feet or 30 feet from the front property.
Give me just a second. See, because their house sits back much farther than, like, if you look at the neighbor to the north, the neighbor to the north, their rear yard, the rear portion of their rear wall facade is probably a good 10, 15 feet in front of, if you were to line them up, 10, 15 feet in front of what their front wall would be. So their home sits very deep.
We're 150 feet off the road.
So if you were to take, I want to look at the R1 20,000 code because that would fall under.
It seems like a variance.
It's a good number for the allowed.
10 by 18 is the
front.
Thanks.
Ordinance.
Thank you.
But so facing the road, there would not be a fence. It's just along the sides.
Yeah. No, we wouldn't allow a 6-foot fence along the front.
Okay, but one of the things in the fence order says such enclosure does not constitute a part of a fence enclosing a property. And let's see, that is in, I don't know where it is, somewhere in the fence ordinance. D, exception to height requirement.
Yeah, do you consider two sides of the fence enclosing the property?
It's not enclosing.
No, never mind. That's for tennis courts, sport courts, batting cages, swimming pools, etc.
That's what I'm worried about, the front setback area. Where's that?
It says fence type enclosure for such uses such as tennis courts, sports courts, swimming pool, ball, diamond, backstops, batting cages, etc. Maybe it's right to do a height.
All you have to do is one of those in the front.
Yeah.
So the front setback is the same as the R1 15,000 zone, and it's 30 feet.
So
you're looking at they're sitting 30 feet plus another 120. That's the issue here, is that their front setback is more than most people's lots.
Are you saying that the fence could start at 30 feet or has to go?
No, let's say you're looking at my house. My house sits maybe 20 feet off the sidewalk, 25 feet off the sidewalk. My front setback then would be the edge of my house. For my zone, or if it's 30 feet, it's 30 feet back, because that's usually where people build. They don't usually build so deep back on a lot. That's not a thing people do much anymore. So if you were to look at most developments, if you were to drive throughout the city, you're looking at 25, 30 feet. And then they start their fences. They go up to 6 feet at that point when they get to the front edge of the house. At that point, they drop down significantly. If they're a closed fence, it drops down to 3 feet. And if it's an open fence, it drops down to 4 feet.
Does this section apply in 2B? It says driveway safe vision area, the closest portion of any vehicular driveway on the same or adjacent lot is located within 12 feet of a fence. Height of the fence shall be modified to conform to subsection C1, which is referring to the height of the fence. Given that this is a driveway parking safe vision area?
Well, it seems like if, for instance, if we granted a variance, we would not want the fence to come any close. We wouldn't want the fence to come into the building setback because we want people to have good visibility in both directions when they come out.
It stops.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. So we would stop it 30 feet from the road anyway.
From the property line.
I mean, there's already a fence beside of it.
Well, it's dropped down to 3 feet.
The three rail. Mm-hmm. That's on the neighbors. Right.
But, that's not very
from the property line. I don't know where you're
I mean, they have
30 feet.
But this is very, that's their side yard.
Far.
Right.
But that's what a front setback is in the R1 20,000.
But there's already a fence all the way to the end. It's just not.
But a six foot fence can start at 31 feet. Right?
Already a fence out on the road.
And they can have a quarter fence up to, what, 0 feet?
That's not a fence then.
Well. We end up to 0 feet in the line, as I'm saying.
You can have a 3 foot. It's 3 foot.
It's three. They drop down to. Okay, so
three or four.
The standard fence is 6 feet, and at the front property line, they drop down to 3 feet for closed fences, which this would be a closed fence. An open fence is defined, I believe, as 40% of the fence is.
So that's an open
is
fence.
See through. Mm-hmm. So if it's an open fence, it can go up to 4 feet in the front of the property line.
Right.
Just along the front. We don't allow those to wrap around the front. You can go closed or open at 4 feet around the front, but hardly anyone ever does.
Well, I think like 30 feet. I think visually, your property is deep. Neighbor. I think 30 feet matters.
Yeah.
To the south.
Is that in, where's that right here?
That's their next door neighbor. That's the Jensen's on the to the south.
Yeah, that might be their side yard. Is that their side yard?
Where does their home face, though? They're a corner lot.
They're a corner
their
lot.
Face,
if they face, they if face, face south. If they face south, then that's their rear and side setback.
Yeah, they sit at an angle. They face southwest, but their driveway goes out to the south onto the Jensen's.
So that would be considered their rear setback. So yeah, it could be 6 feet.
Because their driveway goes out to the south.
It all depends on where the house is situated.
I mean, bottom
we're getting a master class in zoning laws here.
Bottom line is, I think we like the fence. I think it makes sense.
I think the fence is necessary. But the issue here is that the home sits so far back that a typical lot is 30 feet. Like, and then you go from the front property line back 30 feet, and all of a sudden you're at the front elevation of the home. And then. But here you've got another 120 feet.
So
it's a very unique circumstance.
We're back to just meeting fencing requirements, right?
Yeah.
Before we started?
Did we go full circle?
Yeah.
But you're not even going to really see the fence because there's trees everywhere. Trees are up and in bloom, and you're not going to see.
So if the fence terminates 30 feet before the property line, there's no issues with the clear vision area.
Right.
Right. So
if you take it further, it has to drop down to 3 feet.
You have to go at a shorter fence.
Okay.
So we just have to meet the fencing requirements as.
But I thought that was only for corner lots where you have vision issues.
The three foot fence.
I thought that was only for corner lots where you had to have vision issues around the corner.
From the
on our corner where the house Jimmy the Pratts live, they had to have that cut out because you couldn't see, not because
he was reading what the set. It is mostly for corner lots, but we don't allow 6 foot fences to come straight to the property line.
Based on where the house is,
right?
Even in interior lots.
So we have a bunch of sidebar conversations.
Yeah,
let's start, Chandler, one more time. You just read the zoning for their zone, right? Explain how it is they can have a fence starting at 30 feet from the property line.
Well, they can't.
On what basis you just came to that conclusion?
Okay, so their home sits 120 feet from the property line, from the front property line, approximately.
Okay.
Not exact, but it's deep.
Right.
Yes.
Most homes, let me actually just show you an area. I think that'll explain it better than anything.
But, so in the fencing code, does it go off of the setback or off of where the house sits?
So if you look at this is their lot right here.
Right.
This is their front setback. See how deep the home is?
Yeah.
This is their next door neighbors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that their next door neighbors were going to come to us and say, I want to put in a 6 foot fence. They could bring that fence all the way up. They could bring that fence all the way up this property line up to that point.
From their front setback of the other house.
From their own front setback. Now, if they were to do the same thing, holding under the same standard, they could only bring it up to there.
Right.
Because they're so deep.
I think the question was the fence ordinance. Where does it say that?
I don't think it does.
Where's the rule?
That's why we have to. Rule.
It's 10-5-18.
Not for the fence ordinance.
No, not in this. It wouldn't.
So I'm
hold on. Let me.
I'm in 10-5-18. I'm just
look at.
We can't read that. Let's go.
That's tight. Curb and gutter. Optional enclosure area. Traveled safe vision area.
So it just says required setback area, right?
Does it say required setback area?
It says the rear side.
What's in the portion of the lot doesn't even have a
rear. It says street side enclosure area.
This isn't a street side enclosure area, though. That's
what's
on a
that?
Corner lot.
Huh?
That's on a corner lot.
Theirs isn't a corner lot.
No, I know. That's why street side enclosure area doesn't apply here.
The rear side enclosure
area? Well, it says interior lot. All the required front setback and area of the lot and further identified in figure 4, 6, 18A of this section. All of the required front setback area of a lot. That's the streets. But it doesn't say from the actual building. It just says from the required front setback area.
Does it say required? Where are you looking? What's your code?
I'm in B. Street side enclosure area 2. C. Just above C.
Yeah. Interior of the required front setback area of a lot and further.
That is defined as street side enclosure
yeah.
area.
So I think based on that, you can argue that they go back 30 feet because that's their front setback for their zone. At 30 feet, they go 6 feet.
I don't
think it's fair to penalize them because they're lots deep. Were their neighbor to the north could go a 6-foot fence all the way to that 30-foot mark, but to the south they couldn't. I just don't see that as
can't they do the 15-foot with the optional enclosure area? Just from the curb and gutter back 15 feet, you have an optional enclosure area?
That's on the street side. When a street wraps around the side, you have to come off the property line so that you're not you don't have a fence all the way around the property line. You have to come off on that street side. You have to come off 15 feet.
Okay.
And there's no curb gutter here, and there's no street side setback.
And this body is permitted to recommend or pass a variance.
Right, but I don't think
that there's no
let me variance. Let me finish, please. For public safety reasons, right? And a fence at 30 feet, that's part of the safety. So even if it's not part of the code, we can still make that a requirement.
To make it safe.
I don't see any issue with the fence starting 6 feet at 30 feet, at 30 feet back from the property line.
Which is right there.
Okay.
Right, but if you're dwelling
since we're talking about fences and since we're talking
doesn't
safety,
matter where the dwelling is.
Okay, I haven't seen any drawing for a long 4,000 putting a short fence to keep children in.
The property is really interesting because the lowest. And then we have almost a
this is the required front setback, which is 30 feet in their zone.
Yeah, my kids do that.
Okay. See, it doesn't say it from the building. It says the setback.
It's really an issue.
Right. That's just to kind of help you visualize probably.
Yeah, that's what I think maybe is misleading. Or at least it could be argued that way.
And admittedly, what was in my mind was a 3-foot... A little tiny, just some kind of little.
That's not permitted in the fence code, is it? The fence on the
you can front. Do
open.
Is
it open?
Open, three, open or 3 foot?
Open. Yeah,
so
open.
I don't think a variance is required.
So, okay, how do we put a fence? You are going around that?
Yeah.
So where do we stop it? Where do we start it?
Then, yeah. I mean,
just you brought up safety, so I'm just saying from a safety's point of view, kids bolt, and they're not going to just go north and south.
Yes.
So
how many kids have you got run over so far?
I think that the fence that you're talking about putting in my mind is way less about safety and more about noise and about the lighting of the cars as they come in and go out. That's the way I see it.
We just never had cars going this on the property, and I'm just like, ooh.
kids could, you know. So
I think we're going to rely on our new city manager's interpretation of this fence ordinance, and that they can have a 6-foot fence starting at 6 feet. And 30 feet. Sorry, 6 feet.
I think we agree with
that. Totally.
I think the interpretation there is right.
I think the location of the dwelling in the diagram is just to help visualize. I don't think it's trying to say
it's not described in the language.
Right.
Yeah,
their
front setback is not 120 feet.
It doesn't reference the dwelling when it describes
it references the setback.
It raises the required setback, which is 30 feet. Yeah.
Due to some ambiguity, I would suggest that we make the motion, we include that in the motion, that a 6-foot fence be placed 30 feet from the
property
line,
just to avoid any confusion.
I'm good.
Okay.
We do look at fences.
Do we wrap up noise?
No, we don't.
This is a lot.
We just do it.
I think we said on noise, defaulting to the noise ordinance.
Okay.
So, safety. My only concern, I know the homeowners share it, is this irrigation ditch. I know we've offered up lighting there. The ditch is not owned by the homeowners. It's owned by the Pleasant Grove.
Can I speak to that for just a second?
Yes, please.
They've come to the... It's in Pleasant Grove Irrigation Company's wishes to pipe their ditch. They see a lot of conveyance loss in the water, and they want to do similar to what Murdoch Canal did and pipe their ditch. However, where it's not our ditch and it's not our water, we have very limited control on what we can do on this. So,
right.
I just want to throw that out there right from the onset.
So diverting the ditch someplace else is not part of the cards?
No, because ideal world, you'd have that go run along the property line, but where it's a guaranteed easement for them recorded against the property, those easements are very specific about where on the property that ditch runs.
Yeah. So I think, we have a little control over that.
So can I just say this? That ditch is such a danger when we're inside the house. And there's kids that just, because our property isn't fenced, it can't be fenced, it's this wilderness. They play there, they do their thing. I mean, we're always like any kid. But during weddings, we have 2 or 3 people patrolling that ditch. If it has water in it, has water in it once every 8 days. We always pray if we have a gathering, there won't be water in it. But if there is, I usually hire 2 or 3 young adults, and they walk that ditch line, so it's the safest when we have a gathering. Other than that, I'm just like, let's grow. We keep more liability on the house than we should have to, because really if something happened, it would be their problem, not ours. But it's always a nightmare. And when we got that property, it didn't even have a grate on the pipe that goes underground. It has a welded grate. It's like,
I know you've been concerned about that over the years yourself, other than the sentry guards, if you will. Sentries? You haven't thought of any other solutions to that concern, right? I mean, I'm just trying to ascertain if there's any conditions we should suggest
it's
or require.
It's the same as it's ever been when we have gatherings. Other than that,
maybe like what she said, I actually like that. In the event that the Pleasant Grove irrigation ditch is full of water in conjunction with the wedding, that will be monitored by staff at the wedding.
We're not allowed to park. We can't just do boards over there. We're not allowed. There's a branch gets stuck, and debris gets stuck, farmers down the way, and they get the water, and they have a big pit. So there's,
I'm satisfied with that same recommendation you're already doing in practice.
Yeah.
I don't know if this body had any concerns with that.
I don't know if we need to make it a condition. It's just something they continue to do.
I mean, we can't put a condition on somebody's utility easement.
We're not putting a condition on the easement, but putting a condition on monitoring the easement during an event. You can look at it that way. Either way. I think you can go either way on this one.
I mean, I know you haven't had any events, but you also have never had parking back there either, right? Where families leave your event and now they're going in the back and
sometimes
getting in cars and
park back there. You know. Sometimes we have had events where there's parking there and it's never been on the side because I don't know why, but they've often parked in the back and just friends and family, but we have had a lot of trouble because the event is usually in the front.
So does this body have any other questions or suggestions or requirements they want to discuss? Anybody? Can you tick off, Chandler, the list you're keeping track of there?
Yeah, you can. So if somebody wants to make notes of this, if somebody wants to make a motion, that way you don't have to read my handwriting. Circulate parking from the south to the north in order to mitigate lighting.
Other way around, isn't it?
No.
From the south to the north. Right now they got it coming entering the north to the south. Okay. So it'd be from the south to the north. Lighting limited to Christmas lights in the trees. Solar lighting to warn of the ditch. Designate handicap stalls. Install barrier fence 6 feet at 30 feet from the property line. We never really landed on this one. Maybe we did and I missed it. Number of events per year?
20. We'll vote on that, see if it passes.
20.
I mean, someone's going to make a motion. I guess they'll decide if they put it.
Why 20?
It's more than 12, which is what they would like.
Arbitrary. No standard.
Yeah, that's. I think that's where I'm going with this.
You gotta have a reason.
Since we're not taking the primary purpose of the facility to commercial, you couldn't. We're just trying to.
The partial use. The reason is for the general welfare of the persons and properties in the vicinity of the proposed conditional use.
Please
state
that.
General welfare.
Wait, what is it? What are your
names? I'm right here.
You
in the code.
All this? You good?
If you can't. So I don't know when this code would ever apply if we can't apply it here, especially when the applicant wants even fewer than what we're talking about.
Right. And then,
let's see.
I don't know about this traffic circulation thing.
I'm not sure it's required.
Because the lights shine as you
drive. No, I get why we're doing it, but why don't we just say, don't shine your lights in the neighbor's yard.
The thing is, I brought that up mistakenly because I thought that the Shores house was directly across from, but it's actually down to the south. The house across from him is about 10 feet higher.
So that wouldn't be shining any bedrooms?
No. So maybe it doesn't matter.
That's completely unnecessary.
No. I don't think the circulation matters.
It's not to their house. Their house is here. Our property line is out here, so it's going to their side yard.
Yeah, I mean, we want to make these requirements for the conditional use as minimal as possible while still making it conditional. I mean,
there needs to be a requirement on traffic flow, though. You can't have everybody going in and you have parking angle a certain direction. There needs to be some traffic flow, right?
But that's up to them.
But yeah, I mean, that's up to, you know, he's going to be out there with an orange flashlight telling people where to go. I mean, if he wants to spend all day doing that, he can.
I think that's okay.
I mean, as long as it doesn't adversely affect the neighbors, which we sounds like it won't either way.
Once it's on the property, it may not affect the neighbors. If it's on the road, then they're talking about. So is there any way to mitigate it when it's on the road? And I really don't see that there is.
Is there a house across the street on the south end or not?
No.
Is there one on the north end?
Not across the street. There's no streets there. It's just they're adjacent neighbors.
Is there a fence?
The driveway.
I'm talking about
going out the street.
As you exit,
yes.
10 o'clock at night, it's dark, yes. Your headlights are now shining where?
Right
house
there.
Or no
here.
House?
Here.
On the
there.
No.
You'd come out this road
into
here,
a Berman
and that's
their
there.
House.
So,
house?
That would be,
so you want them to exit on the south.
But right? what you can't see from this photo is that these houses all sit up much higher than the road.
They sit higher.
This their driveway's slope.
Yeah, if you go to the street view on Google Maps, you'd be able to tell.
So there's really no reason to.
I don't see why they're
control regulate the flow of traffic based on that nuisance of lighting. Right?
So, all right. So let's keep going down the list. When somebody makes a motion, they can decide if they want to include that.
And the last thing I had was that the noise ordinance shall be strictly followed. The city's noise ordinance.
Okay.
What were you in? D.
Which one is that? It's not really a condition.
It's
you have to do that anyway.
Well, it's in 10, 537.
I'm in
two. It's in
what letter?
G.
What are the connects?
GD. No.
G2D. Right?
G2D.
G.
Section G. Number one, two. It's in section two.
Close conditions.
G2D.
I'm just thinking.
General welfare of persons or property.
Some of these are kind of flimsy, and we really just need to say strictly enforced, you know, light nuisance and noise ordinance.
The city doesn't have a light nuisance ordinance.
Yeah, I'm not getting that. Okay. I'm getting something.
Noise ordinance and.
So the noise ordinance, that would be enforced. If there was never an issue, the neighbors could just call the police.
Right.
Like a normal neighbor.
Do we even need to state that as a condition? Isn't that just a requirement anyway?
It's a requirement anyway, but it doesn't diminish it to restate it. I mean, it's not really a condition at that point. It's just that the.
Right. So then. But we just need to put the minimal conditions that we're requiring.
You don't have to. You're right. But it's not like you're going. My point is, you're not going backwards by saying that. It doesn't add anything or take anything away.
But it doesn't add anything either. So that's
my. You can point. Leave it out and it's the same. You're right.
Yeah. Right.
Because I'm sure that they're already aware of what the noise ordinance is. So
are we ready to make a motion, or do we want to talk some more about this?
So you know.
I'll entertain a motion if somebody like.
I mean, I'm not sure what the conditions
you're aware,
are.
This is an approval by the Planning Commission. This is a review action. This isn't a review recommendation. This doesn't go to the City Council. This is, you're the land use authority on this. So. This is the final say.
This is why we get paid the big bucks, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Lorraine is your right city council.
I mean, other than saying that they can use this as for commercial use. As a venue for events, I'm not seeing any huge things that we're changing. Like, they can park there, they need to be quiet after, you know, a certain amount of time and control the lighting. But what are the conditions we're really placing on them, though?
The list the Chandler just had is all.
The lighting was limited to Christmas lights in the trees, and that's.
Okay.
Limiting the lighting, obviously, from like light pollution in the neighborhood. Solar lighting to warn of ditch, that's backed up by a safety standard. The designate handicap stalls, I think that's pretty obvious. Install a barrier fence 6 feet, and that's to control for noise and lighting, again. And then the number of events per year, you guys are going to have to come up with something.
That's because the proposed conditional use will otherwise present an unreasonable detriment or injury to the health, safety, or general welfare of person properties in the vicinity of the proposed conditional use.
That's what I was going to say.
Okay. I thought that's what you were going to say.
There is one condition that you just hinted at, and that is hours of operation. Should their event need to conclude at a certain time, or can it be 24-hour event, you know, midnight?
Well, as long as they're in compliance with the noise ordinance and they're not bothering people with the lighting, it shouldn't matter.
Right.
Right? I mean, if you want to play cards under the gazebo till 5 in the morning, I guess that's okay.
If I were to look at city code... Hold on. 10-4, I think it's 6A. That's
right. 10-4.
Sorry, no, it's 10-4 Article E.
10-4 E?
Yeah, it used to be 6A. It's changed.
That's the shaman.
That's the SC1.
Right. Yes, that's what I'm getting at. There used to be limitations on hours of operation in there.
There is?
There used to be.
In the SC, that's for the SC1, though. Sort of
no, I know. Play. So in other business districts, we've limited their operation before. I don't know what we do anymore, but if this is a residential zone, I don't think that it's inappropriate to say that events shall end at a certain time, but that's up to you.
In your business, what is a stereotypical?
Typically, you know, the bride and groom are usually off on their honeymoon. coming in by 9 or 9:30. They're not going to stay later. Usually they're off by 9. But sometimes people have traveled and they want to just sit and talk.
Yeah.
So they often sit and talk for another hour and, you know, till about 10 o'clock. But then they're exhausted. And, you know, we've had our family events. They stay till 2 in the morning because that's our family.
That's personal.
That's for my money.
Well, I presume you stay up during these venues, right? Till everybody leaves? What time do you want to go to bed?
You know what? Okay, I'm a party person. I love a big gathering. I love people having a memorable good time. I love the wonder and the magic of a bride group. I mean, I just love people gathering. And so, yeah, this poor man.
We're not related at all.
I'm often up until 2 or 3 just because I like it.
Can I have the back of somebody's
Envision this. Someone has an ice cream freezer for the wedding with 10 flavors of ice cream. It's a Saturday night. The people can't come up to get that ice cream freezer until Monday morning. So on Sunday, I get to go out and for breakfast before church, I can make myself a 5-dip ice cream cone. And there's just wonder in some of this.
So yeah, after reception, we'll sit underneath.
So maybe there's not a time that the event should end, but maybe the time that the music turns off or something. Some type of mitigating the noise.
That's handled by the noise ordinance.
Yeah, right? The noise ordinance has it.
I think one thing I have to keep in mind is we're mitigating, not eliminating. Just because we're saying the music can't be too loud doesn't mean there's, you know, music at 1 o'clock in the morning is maybe not refers to 10 p.m. So it's not like you can't hear it. You're still going to hear it. You see what I'm saying? There's a difference between absolutely no impact versus...
But isn't there a after a certain time decibel level above this? That's what the police would measure, right?
Absolutely.
So that's...
That's in the noise ordinance.
That's in the noise ordinance. So we don't need to... My point is anything that we're doing over and above what's already required needs to be as small as possible, which is,
I agree,
at this point, limiting the tree lighting, putting safety lighting between the ditch and the parking, allowing for a fence in that setback area, and what was the other one that we had that was
handicap stalls and the number of events.
What's that?
Number of events.
Well, I'm still not sold. But, you know, it's your neighbors.
I'll entertain a motion.
All right.
Go correct the brave person.
Do you have the paper?
What's that?
This is the brave person here.
Let's see. All right, I'll go for it. I'm going to do the wedding venue. Someone else can do the bed and breakfast.
I forgot.
We did that one. Okay. I've forgotten hard about that one. Okay.
We need to have a second. Are you making a motion?
He's making a motion.
I'm making a motion.
Okay. We have a second?
I haven't made a motion.
It's been a long night.
It's going to take me a few minutes here.
Those are my notes.
Oh, yeah. I've got those here, too.
Okay.
All right.
It's your motion. Sorry.
I move that we recommend...
No.
I move that we approve a conditional use permit. How are we wording it? For a change in the primary use of residential property located at 9914 North, 4000 West, subject to the following conditions based on Cedar Hills City Code 10-5-25 and 10-5-37. Conditions being...
you want to say what that use is? We're changing to two?
I don't think we're specifying.
Doesn't
matter.
Yeah.
You can talk about it, but... Mention it.
Okay, as the change in use to allow wedding receptions, weddings and receptions. Apparently, there's a difference. Conditions for the permit include lighting limited to Christmas lights in trees and solar lights along the ditch for safety. A fence. To be installed for noise and lighting control
6 feet high, beginning 30 feet back from the property line.
On the north and south side.
You see from the front property line?
From the front property line, on the north and south sides of the property.
Extending 100 feet back.
Do we care how far back they go? Wouldn't we care?
That's true.
And then for parking, to designate handicap stalls. I don't know if we need to mention it, but strict adherence to the noise ordinance and a limited to 20 events per year based on section 10-5-37 subsection G2D, which states the proposed conditional use will otherwise present an unreasonable detriment or injury to the health, safety, or general welfare of persons or properties in the vicinity of the proposed conditional use.
Do I have a second?
I will second the motion.
Should we do the solar lighting by the...
I did.
Okay.
Any discussion before we vote? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Welcome to the wedding reception bed and breakfast business.
Oh, God have mercy on your soul.
Now that it's done, and you know there's no rise, in the month of June or July, we will have you for a dinner. Even though it's for a wedding reception, you and your wives, for a dinner, because I am beyond thrilled.
Because you love a party.
Is that allowed?
Ask it.
It's not a bribe.
Is, it, is the dinner more than $50?
What?
Is the dinner more than $50?
No.
Nope, they're good.
If we're all together in one place, it ought to be noticed, won't it?
That's true.
No.
What's that?
We're not just conducting business.
As long as you don't talk about any planning
issues. Fine, I won't.
No kids, just your wives, just your sweethearts.
Thanks for your patience as we just we like to deliberate.
We've had multiple conversations about that.
I know, I'm something separate. When we gave our conditions, we said 20 events. Do we just want to clarify that that's 20 of their paid events?
Well, this only refers to their
refers to the conditional use.
I didn't want to limit everything else you want to do.
So, do I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed?
I'm like, it's the same.
Nobody's going to play.